Hello, welcome to Burke's Words with Scott Waldman and
Emily Burke, the real star of the show here.
It's true.
I know, it's always true.
It's always never true.
Well, welcome to Waldman's Words.
Yay, the truth comes out.
Yes, we're getting really close to episode 100, you guys.
I thought you were about to say that we're getting really close, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
I mean, we've been working together for like 2 years, so I would hope so.
I mean, I can tell you, as someone who worked at a law firm for 5.5 years, that I was not really close with everyone there.
Yeah, you don't want to be close with lawyers.
Some lawyers are good people. Some means one or more. Some were not. Some of the assistants there were not good, and some were good. You learn a lot. I would say that law and advertising are more toxic industries than music, but let's be positive. Music's great.
I love it.
Shout out to Mike Cubillos.
Always.
Before we even talk about Cody Jones, Mike Cubillos is the fucking man.
True.
No falsehoods there.
Yeah.
Next to Emily Burke, he is my favorite person in the entire music industry.
Yeah, no tea, just facts.
I mean, just opinion facts?
Nope, all fact.
All fact. Yeah, it's somehow singular. Yeah, it's plural. But Emily.
Yeah.
Tell the plethora of people listening a little bit about Cody Jones.
All right. Well, Cody Jones, he is the founder of a label out here in Los Angeles called Anchor 84, which does like a lot of, he has like a punk background. He actually used to work at Epitaph Records.
Whoa. Why do we talk about Epitaph so much on this show?
Because
why?
We love them so
much. No. Be specific as to you, and then I'll be specific as to me.
I also used to work at Epitaph Records as a publicity and legal intern, speaking of lawyers.
And for the record, when I had a meeting at Epitaph, guess who let me in?
I opened the door for Scott.
Metaphorically, too.
Ooh.
Ooh. You fell hard. So.
On iTunes.
Olito Beach. No. Hashtag shameless plug. So, again, Mike Cubillos is awesome. And I'm really looking forward to, quote-unquote, meeting Cody. I've never met the guy, but I've heard of Anchor 84, and I want to learn more, which rhymes with Anchor 84. So, Cody, in advance, thank you so much for doing this show. Every single Tuesday night, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. I'm not going to flip it around like Emily Burke does. And, yeah, I know, always the bridesmaid, always the Burke's maid. And on every Sunday, 5 a.m. Pacific time, 8 a.m. Eastern time, the show airs. I actually just asked Emily Burke to close the door. I'm like, why the heck is this door open? Oh, the acoustics going to be so much better. Thank you.
There you go.
So I guess who is the next guest and who is the next guest?
Oh, our next guest, who we're actually recording later today, is Casey, who works for
Live the Dream.
Yeah.
I would argue that this is one of the most important episodes we're going to have, and I'm really excited that Casey is making the trip up here. I had the extreme lucky opportunity to meet her in Detroit at Warped Tour, and she just does incredible things, and I'm going to leave it at that. I'm so excited to have Casey here. I believe her last name is Quigley, but we might find that out. But Casey, thank you in advance. And then the following week, I'm pulling out my handy-dandy calendar.
Should be Tyler Smith with
of Danger Kids, formerly, and now currently esteemed producer. So I'd say we're doing pretty well until, wait, the Monument is coming, right? Which, what it rhymes with Bunbundred?
Sonsundred?
Sangundred? What does it mean? What am I trying to say, Emily?
100 episodes.
I'm floored. So thank you to everyone listening. Thank you most importantly to Emily Burke for editing these shows. Sometimes it takes more Burke than others. You feel hard.
Let's just leave it. What is this, 94? We're leaving it at 94. Over. Done.
Well, 94 was when I had my bar mitzvah, and it was when you were a negative year.
Yeah.
And it's when Shawshank Redemption came out. It's when Forrest Gump came out. It's when Pulp Fiction came out. It's when Offspring Smash came out, which is an Epitaph record. It's when Weezer's Blue Album came out. It's when Dookie came out. It's a lot, right?
Yeah.
94 is the best fucking year for entertainment ever.
Wish I remembered 94.
Yeah, well, it's impossible to remember something you weren't there for. but shout out to Robert Burke for definitely remembering 94.
Yeah.
And for remembering 69 when Woodstock happened.
He was two.
He was like, basically, well, then he totally remembers it. He was getting stoned with Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Anyway, focus, which is a dirty five-letter word. Cody Jones, thank you. Stay tuned. Enjoy these commercials. Enjoy these ads. And enjoy yourself.
Hello, and welcome to Waldman's Words with Cody Jones. We were just talking before this episode began, and my first words, which are not traditional, were, oh, shit. So thank you to Robert Burke and Lorena Espinoza for that one. Really appreciate you guys.
Those are kind of amazing first words.
Thank you.
My first word was light. You're an asshole.
Yeah. Well, I think it really, like, it was great foreshadowing to the rest of my life.
Well, that's what I said in the intro segment that no one will ever hear when I was meeting, in quotes, Cody, because Cody and I haven't even met. And one more time, shout out to Mike Cubillos for hooking this up. You are the fucking man. But let's go into this, oh, shit. Why did I really, really request you say that? I mean, Cody, can you give some context?
Yeah, we were kind of just talking about how we could say fuck and stuff like that on the show. But my vocabulary in that sense with curse words has dramatically decreased lately because I've got a 2.5-year-old boy here at home, so I've got to really watch what I say and kind of keep things light and clean, you know?
So are they PG-13 or is it like G?
It's like as you go into like saying the F word and you go, oh, fudge.
Okay.
Or, oh, crap, you know.
So it's like a joke in Shrek where the adults will get it, but the kids won't get it?
Exactly.
Wow.
Or, oh, poop, you know.
Yeah, but that's not even inappropriate, though. Like, poop is.
That make me laugh.
Like, poop, like, honestly, I don't think poop is ever inappropriate unless it's on someone.
Mm-hmm. Hey, some people
in
the
physical format, yeah.
Speaking of having a label, as a physical format from your label, can I purchase actual poop?
No, not yet.
Well,
it's not available.
You might be run to something.
Not in the United States, anyways.
Yeah, I know. Overseas, there's quite a demo for that. So, anyway, before we offend the entire Eastern civilization, I just want to say, Cody Jones, you have done very well on the non-recorded segments of this show, so don't fuck this up.
Oh my god.
What a
now
warning.
It's on.
Yeah.
The pressure's on.
Yeah, the pressure is on. I mean, honestly, life is a sales job, and whenever someone says, like, you're putting me on the spot, I'm like, so that means I can't ask a question? Because an inquiry is putting someone on the spot.
Yeah, I feel like I'm always on the spot, and I'm always down for it, so.
Good. Well, your attitude is fucking awesome.
Interview. I think we're going to have a good time today.
I already am having a good time today. So let's start this off. Emily Burke, do you have any questions for Cody Jones?
Yeah, well, let's start off because I know that you're not originally from Los Angeles. You moved here in 2008. So where are you originally from and what got you into music?
Yeah, sure. I moved down to LA in 2008. I'm from Northern California, like near Santa Cruz and Monterey counties. So pretty mild temperature all year round, which is great compared to the heat we're having right now in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'm from the Valley, girl, I know.
Oh, yeah. So you know it's probably burning right now.
No, the Valley is a beautiful cold climate with beautiful cold people.
I agree
in
on the
hearts.
Last part, yeah.
No, just kidding.
The 818, bro. Wake up every day destroyed.
Yeah, my girlfriend's actually from Woodland Hills, so
I'm from Woodland Hills.
Oh, yeah. So I'm familiar, yeah,
with the hills
you guys
of Woodland.
Grew up with.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great place to grow up. I liken the Valley to where I grew up on Long Island. It's, like, very close to the major city, but it's still suburban. But I can say this on record. Woodland Hills has some really beautiful areas and has some areas that I would literally be afraid to walk around. Wait, what's that sound? It sounds like you're, like, driving to Woodland Hills.
Man, it's garbage day.
Really? That's what you want to lead with? That this show is garbage day?
Yeah, sounds like Woodland Hills.
Yeah, it honestly sounds like trash.
Exactly.
So anyway,
So yeah,
we're ADDJing this. So where were you? What the fuck were we talking about?
I think we're talking about, I grew up in Northern California.
Yeah, it's smug.
Yay, hella.
More expensive than anywhere in America. Los Angeles is more expensive than any city in the United States except New York and San Francisco. New York is more expensive than any city in the United States except for San Francisco. San Francisco, it costs $4,000 for a one-bedroom apartment. Meaning, do the math, $48,000 a year, not including electricity, not including food, not including any amenities. You are broke if you make $150,000 a year. So what's it like, rich boy?
Hey, he's talk in to LA me. Now.
I didn't grow up in San Francisco. I grew up in a town called Prunedale, which is like...
Sounds fruity.
Yeah, it's kind of Hicksville, really. Like, it's in the middle of Salinas and Santa Cruz, so...
Ooh, there's weed up there, right?
It's a little bit more country-esque, you know, if you will. Like, the Rodeo and...
Cowboys and
lots of dairies and stuff like that.
So you're north of San Francisco, or are you, like, east, or, like, give me geography... Oh, south? Okay.
Yeah.
Santa Cruz is cool as fuck, by the way. I love that area.
Yeah, and that place has gotten expensive, too, because of the Bay Area. So,
because of the tech kids.
Yeah, man, they're all moving down, and my mom actually just moved out of there, and she took off for Washington because it's way cheaper. And but it is beautiful to visit and, like, hang out there, and that's what got me into music was, like, skateboarding and, like, all the punk bands in Santa Cruz and stuff in that area.
What
like,
bands are you thinking of? Because there are a few I'm thinking of, and I'm just very curious if we're going to coalesce on this, because we said in the intro you have an Epitaph background. For the record, so does Emily Burke.
Hi.
Oh, awesome. Right on. Yeah, so I got into, like, Good Riddance.
Yeah.
A band from there that I was super into, and then, like, a bunch of the local bands. We would throw shows in, like, at houses on farms and stuff, because you're out in the middle of nowhere, so you can be as loud as you want. So there's bands like Uzi Suicide and...
Yep. I was thinking Good Riddance. I'm glad you said that. You know, some comprehensive rebellion here on Fat Records. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, bro. I'm not... I've been for the record. Am I on Wikipedia or looking anything up right now, Emily?
No, this is all just coming from you.
This is... Well, thanks for the resting bitch voice again. But, like, this is literally, like, I live and die for, like, the mid to late 90s music. And Good Riddance, admittedly, is not even in my top 10 favorite bands on Fat Wreck. And that just goes to show you how incredible that label is. But I love them.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah, they're one of the bands that, when I was skateboarding and stuff, we put that on and skate to it all day long. And then it just really, like, fueled me to get into, like, more music. And then, obviously, more, like, Guttermouth and AFI at that time. And then Rancid and just, you know, all the mainstream punk bands that you would love today. But, yeah, anything that was, like, skate-oriented, that would just make you want to go out and, you know, get hyped on that.
Well, you're getting me hyped right now. So, I guess the skate... What year were you born? And if you're ashamed to age yourself, I'll just tell you I'm 37. So you might be older or younger.
I'm not ashamed. It's actually in my label name.
Oh, you were born in 1984? That's what I assumed! Ah, you're 3 years younger than me, young buck. So you... And I'm sorry for calling you rich boy before I was fucking with you. But basically, if you were born in 84, does that mean you graduated high school in 2002?
Yep, sure is.
You were a freshman when I was a senior, but you were probably bigger and could beat me up.
I don't know. I was kind of like, I did some sports growing up like most kids, and I think I was a freshman. I was still, under 100 pounds because I was trying to do wrestling. So I had to keep my weight down. And, yeah, so I was still pretty tiny.
Well, I wrestled too. Like, what weight class?
I guess it was under 90.
Oh, dude, so you... There. Yeah, no, I was... I wrestled at 103, which is tough because they're all freaking strong and lean and mean. And I was a good wrestler from second grade till eighth grade. I was a captain of my middle school team. In fact, my current Facebook profile pic is literally me in a singlet. But, dude, everyone went through puberty, and I didn't, and they just had that natural man strength and would destroy me. So I stopped.
Yeah, like the kids with mustaches and stuff, and they're just, like, coming in with, like, their full man voices and stuff. Like, you ready to wrestle? Let's do this. Yeah. So that's why I stayed in the lower weight class. So I was with, like, more scrawny kids. But, yeah, the 103 weight, I feel like, is the entry level to that next division, right?
I believe it was 98, and then 103. But I haven't really thought about this in a long time. But let's on my bar mitzvah theme, I was talking about 1994 being the best year ever, and I stand by it. When you were 10 and I was 13 having my bar mitzvah, while Smash came out, speaking of Epitaph again, Weezer's Blue Album, Dookie, Shawshank Redemption, Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump, literally the best year ever. So what were you doing in 1994 when Emily was negative 138?
You know, I can't really recall. Probably playing baseball and kicking rocks or something.
I hope those rocks got you back, dude.
Dude, one time, not to go off on a crazy tangent.
No, this show is built on that. Go off.
We were camping, I was throwing rocks in the woods, and you know, big trees everywhere, like everything's good, feeling great. I throw a rock at a tree and it bounces right back and hits me in the face. So I think you're right, those rocks did get me back.
I knew it. So yeah. Thanks for that tangent, and you fucking proved me right.
Yeah.
Thanks,
one
dude.
For one.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can make another argument. But okay, fine. Then tell me this. What specifically, besides skating, like, what band was that band for you? And it doesn't have to be a Santa Cruz band. Like, what was the band? Like, for me, I grew up, and I would say the Beatles and the Who were commonplace. But the act that I first, quote-unquote, discovered, I mean, discover, you could find out through MTV or through a friend or whatever, but Weird Al was the very first act that got me into music. Mm-hmm. And what was your Weird Al?
That's funny because, yeah, he was one of the first tapes I got, too.
What album?
The Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park is Frightening in the Dark. All the dinosaurs are Alapalooza.
Yes.
Look, am I on my computer looking this up?
Why do you just know these things?
Because I'm a fucking encyclopedia, Burke. I'm sorry. Why don't you know these things?
Because I was born in 97.
Oh, because you're born. That's right. So you're not allowed to be knowledgeable about things before you.
Yeah, it didn't
exist. You narcissist. Nothing existed. So you only are allowed to know about, like, ska getting big and dying and boy bands and nu metal. So that's what I'm going to extensively ask you about.
Like, the world, in my mind, started in 2001.
Well, that's when Drive Thru Records took over the world. Back to Cody.
But yeah, so I guess first real bands that like got me hyped were No Doubt and Green Day, because those were like the next cassettes that I bought.
Respect.
After that, so it was like Weird Al because I'm like, hey, I'm a kid and Weird Al's fun and he makes funny songs and I can listen to it. My parents are cool with that. And then finally started getting into more of the rock stuff, I guess, rock and punk and. But yeah, no, I remember drumming in my room, like just with sticks, like on a pillow, to No Doubt, Tragic Kingdom, and just like being hyped on that. And same with Green Day's Dookie. Yeah, so those two bands kind of like started it off, and I think I still have those cassette tapes here.
Well, I often say this on the show, but the very first concert I went to without my parents, because the first concert I went to was The Who, but the very first one that I went to without my parents was 10 minutes from my place, where I actually just was with Emily Burke and Stringer at Jones Beach. And it was Lunachicks were the first band, and they were all right. Weezer on the Pinkerton tour, which is a top 10 favorite record for me. And No Doubt was the headliner. So I can tell you, and this was just as Sunday Morning was the single. So at that point, No Doubt already had, like, Just a Girl, I'm going to say this in order. Spiderwebs, Don't Speak, Excuse Me, Mister were all songs that did well. I mean, Excuse Me, Mister and Sunday Morning didn't do as well as the others, but Don't Speak did better than all their songs combined. So they were one of the biggest bands in the world, and that was a fucking show, dude. I don't know if you got to see them around that time. Did you?
No, I didn't, unfortunately.
Sucks for you, dude.
I know. Kicking rocks again.
Well, metaphorically kicking rocks, but, so I guess I think that what we're going to do is this segment, cause believe it or not, man, we're like 3/4 done with this segment already, which is awesome because it's substantive and we're getting to know you, but let's spend segment 2 talking about your label and let's spend segment 1 learning about you. So I guess what happened in your life after Tragic Kingdom? Was it a Tragic Kingdom?
No, things were good. So then eventually I kind of got hurt really bad skateboarding. I had back surgery when I was 16, two ruptured discs. So that kind of took me out of skateboarding and wanting to follow that. And I was like, shit, man. I was like, what do I do with my time now? You know, I'm in high school still and can't do that anymore, or at least not as aggressively, you know? So I was like, shoot, you know, I love music. Like, I want to play drums, you know, I want to play drums and stuff like that. So, you know, I told my parents, like every kid, you know, I was like, hey, you know, my dad played drums when he was younger. And I thought it was a shoe-in for sure. And he was going to give me a drum set or, you know, just anything I could bang on. And they were still super rad. And they got me, like, a used Ibanez guitar and a little...
Seven mini, string? Was it a seven? No. I hope not. You're not ready for that. I was hoping...
That'd be amazing if they're just like, you want drums? So here's a seven string, bitch.
Well, no, but because when I, and this is something that Emily should know about because I talked about nu metal. During that time in the late 90s, bands like Limp Bizkit and Korn would use seven-string Ibanez guitars, which was making the low note really low.
What's the late 90s?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm gonna bang my head into a wall while I listen to Cody talk about, like, the rest of his shit. Keep going, please. Make me happier than Emily Burke just did.
Well, I can tell you something, like, once I did get into playing music and seeing those kids with the seven strings, it was all just, like, chugging riffs, so they never even touched the seventh one. So, yeah, it was pretty hilarious. But, yeah, so I ended up getting a guitar, which is rad, and I was like, all right, shoot, you know, like, you know, I wanted drums, but fuck it, I'll learn guitar and go that route. So I did, I just kind of, like, self-learned and learned from friends and then joined my first punk band and... that was fun, and then...
Wait, what was that band called? Would I have known the name?
No, it's called Without Reason.
I mean, it seems like you had one.
Yeah.
Get it?
Get it. No, not really. No. What?
Well, Without Reason, like you didn't have a reason for that name. I was being very esoteric, and obviously the first thing I think of when I hear the word reason is Hoobastank. So did you guys sound like Hoobastank? Ooh.
No, but I did like them at that time.
I still like them. Don't ever fucking have a guilty pleasure. Dude, they're amazing.
What was that single called?
Crawling in the Dark?
Yes.
There you go. The first single where basically when I heard it, I was like, this is Baby Incubus. I love it. And flash forward to 2006, my band, The City Drive, direct support for Hoobastank in Chicago at the House of Blues. To this day, one of the greatest nights of my life because of Hoobastank.
That is amazing.
And the reason is Jew.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, well, Emily Burke and I are 1.5 Jews, so that's why I did that. Never. Cody Jones, I don't think is Jewish based on your name, but I could be wrong.
No, I'm not. Nah.
I just added you on Facebook. Anyway, continue.
Sick.
Yeah, bro.
Except.
Oh, dude. No, it's like blocked. That would have been so funny.
Poked.
Yeah, oh, dude, poked. Fuck poking. It's so creepy.
Is that still a thing even?
Yes. Oh. I get poked all the time on Facebook.
Ew, by who?
I'm not going to call anyone out. Okay, call them out. People trying to get my attention in bands. It's really? Not a good way for it to happen.
Ew.
Sorry. Like, Cody is a guy with a label, which we'll go into. If a band wanted to sign, wants to sign to your label, do you think the poke strategy is the best strategy?
Definitely not. And I think maybe that's partly why... My Facebook is private.
Oh, is that your passive aggressive way of saying you're not going to accept me? You don't have to accept me. At the end of the day, it's going to hurt you, bro.
Ooh. Wow.
Well, it's because if he tags me and we tag each other and stuff, then there's going to be more people, hashtag marketing, viewing this. Mm-hmm. Wait, are you rolling your eyes at me, Emily Burke?
Me? No. I took 2 marketing classes in college that I totally didn't skip.
That's like the people who say, yo, bro, I'm a great manager. I took a fucking music industry class.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I think that Emily Burke has learned more about artist management than any of you managers by working in it. Anyway, so Cody, back to you, because this is Waldman's Words featuring Emily Burke and Cody Jones, but mostly about you, Cody Jones. So in a minute, I want you to literally say whatever the fuck you want about bridging the gap to your passion for music and skateboarding and kicking rocks to the label.
Mm. Cool. Well, yeah, so I'm just going to jump forward here because my personal music career was not all that exciting. I got into, after punk, I got into like metal and hardcore, and found out that my band members were less motivated than I was. So I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to go to LA. I'm going to move to LA, try and figure it out. I got an internship with Epitaph, and I was doing that for just under a year. And I was like working at a grocery store, and I was like, you know what? I don't think I'm going to get hired on. I was just about to quit interning.
What'd you do when you were an intern?
So they had this warehouse off of San Fernando over here in like Atwater Cypress Park near Eagle Rock, kind of in LA. And when I was interning or when I first started?
When you were an intern, because I was an Epitaph intern too.
Oh,
look at you two, interns connecting.
Whoa.
Yeah, so doing posters and mailings and stuff like that, and just whatever they could feed me, you know, basically. I think I cleaned the fridge one day for like $50.
Cody Jones accepted my friend request. That's a good thing to end on besides the clean fridge.
I never cleaned a fridge at Epitaph. They skipped me for that one.
Well, Cody has officially done more work for Epitaph than you. Yeah. So, Cody, we'll be right back.
I was broke at the time. I was like, man, we're working for free. You know, like, I'm working at a grocery store part-time. I was like,
dude, I worked at a grocery store. I worked at a grocery store growing up. It was the best and worst job of my life because I learned how people were. Because the difference between a grocery store and a bougie coffee place or a really well-to-do restaurant is that the richest of the rich and the poorest of the poor go to grocery stores. So you get to see how everyone treats you. And it's awesome and disgusting. Anyway, back to Cody Jones, Emily Burke, Scott Waldman, Waldman's Words. Sorry?
So working at a grocery store was great, though, because I got to eat all the markout food. And, like, since I was broke, I could eat all the stuff that they were going to throw away. but yeah, I worked at this Trader Joe's actually in West Hollywood, and so yeah, all these celebrities and people would come in. It was pretty wild.
Oh shit.
But yeah, so I was interning, and that was kind of
running. We have to wrap this up. We have to go into segment two. I mean, we're actually not going to talk about Anchor at all during the next segment. We're just going to talk about grocery stores. So stick around for Groceries Words with Store Waldman. Hello, we're back. Grocery store Cody. Tell me one story about grocery storing.
Grocery storing. One fun like day that I was there. There's a couple fun days, but Pauly Shore came in, you know, and he just
that's awesome.
A week long bender, and he had like some like hot young girl like pushing his shopping cart, and he would just go around and be like that, and she would just like toss it in the cart. And one of my coworkers was like, yo man, I'm gonna go talk to him. I was like, nah, he doesn't look like he's in the mood. He's like, no, I'm gonna go talk to him. And he goes up there, he's like, hey, what's up, man? I'm so sorry. He's like, bye. And just looks at him and goes, bye. And pushes the poor kid out of the way.
That's sad. I mean, I don't want to be his son-in-law anymore. Maybe I want to be in the army now. I'm not sure if I want a biodome, but maybe I need an Encino man. Am I looking at shit online right now, Emily Burke?
I have no idea what exactly. You just said to me.
Cody Jones, before we talk about your label, can you explain to the youngin who literally was born like after AOL boomed, what I'm talking about? Yeah, that's great, but irrelevant to what I'm saying.
Oh, well.
Please, Cody.
Some of the best teenage movies you could probably ever experience.
But why did I bring those up in succession?
Why did you bring them up with Pauly Shore?
Yeah, that explain to her who the great magical Pauly Shore, I was just about to sound so New York, who Pauly Shore was.
Pauly Shore. He was like, at that time, he was one of the like rising stars of comedy, I guess. I don't know what you want to say about him, but he was in all the like top movies at that time.
Well, he is a comedic star. He doesn't have the jury duty anymore, but he has the jury duty talking about him. So anyway, tell me about what Kick Rock started your label.
Yeah, so after interning, long story short, I got offered a job there.
Make a short story long, dude. You have right now, honestly, you have about 18 minutes to talk about your label.
It's going to go by fast.
That's what she said.
I finished interning. They offered me a job like in the warehouse. And I was like, yeah, sure. Heck yeah, that's great. Like, let's do it. And at that time, there was like four people, I think. There's this guy named Frank, and then his and then this guy Mike, and Mike had been there for 10 years, Frank had been there for 16, and they just unloaded all their knowledge of like the party days, like of Pennywise and Offspring and all that good times, like that they experienced like in the warehouse and like sitting on pallets to guard them and shipping out like these massive orders to distributors and stuff in stores around the world. And it was just cool, like myself being in LA and like being part of this like amazing iconic punk label that
my favorite label on the planet of all time. And for the record, this episode will be after it, but I'm actually having dinner with a former Waldman's Words guest tonight, Chris Voitel, who is an amazing guest. And Epitaph Records is literally my favorite label of all time.
Yeah, man. I was so pumped like when that finally happened. Even just to get the internship, I was stoked. And like seeing Brett in the office every single day, you know, was just really cool. And he's a really nice guy and down to earth and easy to work with. Yeah, so I did that for a little while, and then they started the Kings Road division, their merch company, and they brought in Carl Hansel, and then I got moved up to do web store coordinating, and I did that for the next couple of years there with them. I was still pretty small, and now they have like a massive two-structure facility for their merch company, which is wild to see. But yeah, so I worked there for a while, and while I was at Epitaph, like I was still invested in the music scene. Hold on a second. Someone's trying to call me.
Wow, this is officially the most ADD interview. Yeah, no, doesn't.
Okay, good. Yeah, so I started.
Merge the call.
Dude, shit happens. It's all good. This is working. It's all good. This actually makes me enjoy this interview more because it's more human. So keep going. Do your thing. If you have to go to the bathroom, go to the bathroom and like let's hear it.
Already did. So I was working at MSF and I was like, man, there's so many rad bands out there that like I'm still connected to and I want to see grow. And I was like, what can I do to help them out? I'm not playing in bands anymore. All I'm doing is working. And so I was like, I'm going to start my own label. And I thought about it. I was like, is this the right thing to do? And I was like, fuck it. Who cares? I was like, let's just go, you know? And so there's a bunch of bands I was been in contact with, and I decided to put out like a free compilation to kind of see like who gave a shit, you know, like once I put it out, you know, like who would promote it and like who would really care that they were a part of this compilation. And
who two was
of those
on
bands
it
were Second to Last and The Story So Far.
I've heard of the, both of those bands.
Yeah, and at the time The Story So Far were just, I think they were both kind of in the same pocket. They like were just young kids, like
I mean they're still young kids to us, dude. We're old as yeah. fuck. Like they're still young and they're very talented, both of those bands.
Yeah, so I ended up putting out an EP for Second to Last first to start because they were more hungry at that time. And yeah, and then later just kind of, so that's, I guess, what kicked it off, really. I was just wanting to help out with these bands, and I was stoked that there was some cool bands out there that were coming up, and I knew that at that time, like, they would have the chance to, like, sign to a label like Epitaph, and so they needed kind of, like, a launching pad to get off the ground, and that's kind of how my label's run since then, really, is just doing as much as I can for every single band to help them grow.
Can you be specific on that? Because there's people listening that are going to be learning from you. So I literally manage bands for a living and just started an A&R gig, signed this group called Wilder Sons, and they're awesome. And whenever someone asks me, you know, what do you do as a manager? I'm like, do you have 14 days? Like, it's literally, it doesn't end. So in, like, I'm looking at the time right now just to give you a frame of reference. You have 13 minutes left. Tell people what you do and why, you know, your label and you are fucking good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's just me that runs the label. Aside from hiring Mike to help me with publicity this year, I've been doing everything myself, from signing the bands, putting them in the studio, finding the right studio partners for that, doing all the production, getting the records in movement and getting pressed, doing all the distribution, working with my distributor, doing door-to-door distribution too. Like I still will go to record stores, and if they don't have it, I'll bring copies with me and make sure that they have it. Trying to help out with booking here and there for bands when they're first starting, but booking's a pain in the butt. So
yes, it is. And I legally, as an artist manager, can't do it in California, so I'm stoked.
And
yeah,
this label you started in like 2010, right? So you've been doing this all on your own for 8-9 years.
Yeah, definitely. And then also now having a child, and like I still have a day job too, so it's just like it's a lot of work, you know. So I'm putting in all this effort for these bands that I love, and you know, the list goes on. What I do would help them, like I just helped a band get their own merch store up and running and the design submitted and like all that, and that takes so much time to get going, and that's just going to be benefit the band, you know. Really, like I want them to have money so that they can like tour and keep doing what they do, so
that they can really do better job for your label. I mean, it's altruistic and it's also business. If they make money doing it, they're not going to be happy, and they're not going to be able to tour, and they're not going to be able to, I don't know what you do for recordings, but you know, good recording costs money. So they're not going to be able to put in the output for you. So if there's good vibes and positive people, the supply and demand are endless, right?
Yep. Yeah. And that's just the thing. Like if the band can't tour and they're strapped and they're worried about their home life and finances and stuff, then like I've got no band to push. So I want to make sure that they're set up and that they're rolling well so that we can continue to do what we do and I can continue to help them. Because if they, you know, disband, which has happened, you know, plenty.
It's never happened with any band ever. Every band always stays together. Every single one. The Beatles didn't even last that long. People don't even realize it. Not every band's the Rolling Stones or Aerosmith. Most bands break up. That's it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the more challenging things, is to keep everyone's spirits high. You know, that like we're moving in the right direction, that we're moving forward, and that things just take time. Like, you know, in the music industry, like how far out you have to plan most things to get them accomplished. And so like really working with that and translating that to the band so that they understand that we're in process and it's just going to take a minute, you know, is really important, and so that they know what we're doing every step of the way. And they can feel confident in that going forward. But yeah, man, like there's a lot to be done and the list never ends. I write out new lists every single day of things that I have to accomplish for all the bands. And I think one of the best parts about doing my own label too, like I've tried other ventures, music related and non-music related, with friends and partners, and they never worked out because I always did more work than they did. And
I think preach. Sorry if I sound like an alarm. Preach. Thank you.
But yeah, this is something I really want to do on my own, even though the financial risk is like crazy, you know. And I didn't have any backing. I've got nobody funding me. I saved up, I think, one or two checks from Epitaph to like put out the first EP, you know, and stuff, and just kind of kept it rolling from there and taking some bumps, taking some gains. But
you got gains, bro. You swole.
I'm so swole. I got protein shakes.
Yeah, bro.
But yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you take these bumps as you know, you get them, and you take the highs when you get them too. And it's just like all worth it because I love the bands I work with. And that's another thing about doing it myself, is like, I don't have anyone telling me what band I should sign.
Yep.
If I love the music and I have a great conversation with the bands, and like we all gel and they get it and I get it, like, and our common interests are the same, that we can work together, that's what I want to sign. I don't want to sign a band just because they're like popular right now, or they have like tons of plays on Spotify.
Fuck that. You have to go with your gut. And yeah, the band, honestly, I can tell you this as a manager and as now someone who's in A&R for Legend Recordings. Here's the thing. I would rather I like you as a person than like your music, because it is so hard. It is such a hard thing to succeed in this. So if your attitude is good and you're a good person, that's honestly the most important thing to me. And then a very close second is being a fanboy for your music. If you don't have a combination of that, I can't do it. I just fucking can't.
Yeah, it makes it so much easier when the people are good. You know, and they're like awesome people. Like Grayscale was a band I signed, and I would love them, and I kind of like the situation they were in, I wasn't like in love with, but like I love them so much, like I went for it, and they're still like now. I put out an EP and a full length, and then Fearless came around and ended up picking them up for me and putting out their recent record. But to this day, those guys are so nice. They're some of the best dudes. We talk all the time. We hang out. Like, we're just genuinely friends too now through music, and I think that's another cool part of music, that you become friends with so many people you probably otherwise wouldn't be.
Well, we love Fearless, and I love Grayscale. They're killing it. And I work with Fearless sometimes, just I do a lot of festivals with them too. And I mean, Grayscale is just on the Vans Warped Tour and all that jazz. Mm-hmm. So I've seen them multiple times.
And they're also from where you go to school.
Actually, they played at my school maybe like a couple months before they got signed, or they announced their signing to Fearless. And I was like, oh, these guys are good. And then they came out. I'm like, I swear to God, I know who they are. I think one of them went to Drexel, actually.
And for the record, that's the band that I know most about that you've worked with. And cool. I can tell you that their debut LP on Fearless is a perfect combination of pop punk and Third Eye Blind.
It's fantastic.
That's the way I describe it. And I actually have a Grayscale t-shirt. So shout out to that band for being amazing.
Hell yeah. And I think you're going to see more of that sound from them in the future. That was kind of like always our plan from the beginning. And I'm glad to see them carry it through with a new label too. Because that sound is so fun. And they're huge fans. If you go on YouTube, you can see their covers of Third Eye Blind.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, they're amazing. But them, like, I just want to shout out like Southpaw, who's been amazing to work with. And they're doing some really great stuff.
Dude, this is shout out corner. You have literally 6 minutes to shout out whoever you want. But for the record, I was waiting for you to bring up Grayscale, and I'm glad you did.
Me too. Love Grayscale.
Yeah, they're awesome, man. I've had great times with, like, Heart to Heart and this band called We Still Dream, who disbanded too early, I think. But they were another amazing band. And then my current roster, yeah, Southpaw, Dear Youth from Canada, first Canadian band I've worked with. They're amazing. We just signed Real Talk, and those guys are super fun. They're from the New England area. They're kind of spread out. And then in LA, I'm really hyped to be working with another vocal band called Slow Trip. And those guys were in bands, are Tank from Rotting Out. He's in the band. And
Punk as fuck, dude. Dan. Rotting Out is punk as fuck.
Dude, yeah. So these guys were, John and Dan were in The Greenery, and then Martin from No Bragging Rights. So they were all in these hardcore bands. But Slow Trip is like this grungy stoner rock kind of band. And it's super rad.
You know how I've heard of them, right? You know how I heard that band? Just so you know. Mike Cubillos. It all goes back to him. I think he tweeted about it on Earshot Media. So I've known about that group for a long time, and they're cool. And I'm a 90s kid, so I love that shit. So good sign.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I love them, man. It's one of those things where they're older. They're around my age and stuff. And so they have jobs and girlfriends and things going on, and I knew it was going to be a slower project, but I love the song so much, and they're dope, and they're from LA, so we can hang out easily and accomplish stuff here, you know.
Being from LA is a blessing and a curse, because I think most people here are vapid. Anyway, Cody Jones, so let's see how much time we have, just because I want you to say as much as you humanly can. We have just under 5 minutes, so here's a question for you that concerns what you're talking about, but also hopefully will make you look even cooler than you are. So what advice would you give to a person who lives in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, that wants to start a label?
Yeah, the advice, I guess it's just mainly love what you do and give it your all, you know? Like, I didn't really have a plan when I started. I just went for it because it's kind of like one of those things, like, fuck it, the time's never going to be right. I'm never going to have enough money. Maybe one day, but, you know, not for a long time. And give it your all. Do your research, too, and find bands like we were just talking about. Find bands that you truly love and that are good people that you can continue to work with. Because that's, at the end of the day, if you're not loving what you do, you're going to suck at it, you know? So, yeah, man, just be passionate.
What do you mean by do your research, though? Like, because, like, honestly, like, I really... And I don't want to talk down to anyone, mansplain, whatever word you want to use. Like, what does that mean for the people listening? Because Emily and I really look at this show as an educational forum, and we have label people large and small on our show, and you're one of them. So explain what you mean by do research, because if someone can listen and learn that from you and do it right, you might potentially help their career move faster.
Sure. Yeah, I think research can cover a lot of ground, like, from researching the bands, and I don't jump into signing bands right away. Like, I watch them for a while and see how they're doing, see how many shows they're booking themselves before I can jump in. So that's one area of research. And then just every day I'm learning, and I love that about doing this myself too, is that, like, whether it's through a mistake or just purely, like, Googling something, like, I'm always trying to figure out how I can do distribution better, marketing better, you know, booking shows better, you know. And so if you can, the more research you do on that front yourself and just absorb and take it in and learn every single day, the better your outcome will be. So yeah, research, learn every day, you know, take your time with stuff, and look it up if you don't know the answer, or ask somebody that's doing research too, you know, like ask a peer that's in the music industry some questions that you have that maybe they can help you with. Yeah.
I think that was really good. Yeah. Emily, do you have a final question for him?
A final question?
Yeah, or a final declarative statement, whatever you want to do.
I mean, I really like the thing that you said about just like asking people, especially in industries like the music industry. It's one of those things where people are like ready and willing to help you, especially if you like ask them questions about them in specific and like how they got to where they are. And it's one of the things I like about this show. Not that I'm going to like plug the show.
No, plug the show. Fuck Cody Jones. Plug the show.
But I just think it's like a really good point, because I feel like people are kind of afraid to, you know, ask or like reach out to someone that they think is above them, or, you know, and they just kind of stay
That's how
stagnant.
We fucking learn.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to ask questions, learn. There's a quote that I live by where if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. So you can learn from everyone. You can learn, like, grocery store, perfect example. Like, there's so many people at a grocery store. And if you don't know where something is in the grocery store, it takes a tenth of a second to ask someone politely in that store, where is the Chex Mix? You will learn that way. And that's kind of analogous and a metaphor for this industry. It's like people want to be treated like they're people. And most people are willing to help. And the ones that aren't, fuck them. And the ones that are, if you're cool with them, they're going to be cool with you.
Exactly.
And I think, too, the music industry is so tight-knit. Like, you're going to run into the same group of people. So I just love to, like, give people chances and, like, you know, let them in my door. Because they're good people, and I'll probably see them in some capacity later on. And that's definitely happened with me. Like, a good handful of people now came to me for questions, and now I'm asking them questions because they're at a bigger label or they're in a bigger entertainment industry, you know, whatever. And I think it's cool. We're still friends, and now we can both equally learn from each other. And I think that stuff just always comes back around. So, yeah,
well,
don't be afraid to share.
You know? Speaking of connecting, can you give, you know, your final thoughts and then plug all your social media so people can connect with you and Anchor 84s or any bands that you just signed that you
or if you just want to say like Grayscale's contact info, whatever you want to do. This is yeah. This is it. Yeah. And then we're going to wrap this up.
Does anyone want Colin's direct phone number? No.
Go for it. Go for it. I mean, on Waldman's words, we destroy lives.
That's it, man. No, I mean, just thank you guys for having me on the show. And then check out anchor84.com, all spelled out. You can find everything there, like all of our links to social media and music and our bands. That's the best. Websites, get one. Anchor84.com.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Cody. We appreciate it. We appreciate Mike Cabillos for setting this all up. And
we appreciate you and your time. We know that you have a child, so your time is technically more valuable than mine.
Yeah.
Because that's the most important job you have. So thank you for this, and hopefully we'll connect in person soon.
Yeah, thank you guys, and thanks, Mike, if you're listening. And,
oh, he's listening.
Yeah.
Better be listening.
You guys rule, and I'm stoked to have been part of the show and, you know, meet you over the phone. And, yeah, let's do it in person.
All right, bye.
I'm totally down. Get my contact info from Mike, and I don't care if people hear this. Get it from Mike, and we'll make something happen, because, like we said, proof of concept.
Yeah.
Meeting someone in person is infinitely better. And look how easy it was. This happened.
Yeah.
People are down to do it until you fuck with them.
Well, I've got good facial expressions, so if we can see that in person, I think you guys will.
Way to end the show narcissistically. Have a great day, Cody Jones.
Got you.